On Sunday night, beloved listeners, U.S. Secretary of State Pompeo spoke on Fox News, and he said this. He's working on the phones, or working the phones, trying to convince the rest of the world that it was the Iranian government that attacked the oil tankers in the Gulf. Now, many countries, perhaps thinking back to the good old days of the Gulf of Tonkin incident, are vaguely sceptical. And this is especially true with the Europeans. And of course, the US does have form, both this century and the last, in manufacturing incidents which lead to war. The other thing that comes to mind, of course, are WMDs. So is it to be war in the Middle East again? Regime change, both? In our Melbourne studios is Sheram Akbazadeh. Sheram is the research professor in Middle East and Central Asia politics at Deakin. And Sheram, I welcome you to our little program.
Thanks for having me, Philip.
Mike Pompeo, working the phones, says he's got evidence that Iran did the attacks, but we're not convinced, are we?
No, we are not convinced. I think everyone is asking for more evidence, and the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has also asked for an independent investigation of what's been happening. But look, the Americans are just saying, take our word for it. And it reminds a lot of observers of what happened during the just before the invasion of Iraq in 2003. You know, Americans were saying Saddam is developing some mass destructions, and here is the evidence. They showed some photos at UN, at United Nations Assembly, and people just took their word for it, and it was quite convincing. So now there's very little. There's a grainy video image of a boat near a tanker. We don't know if it's an Iranian boat. We don't know what they're doing. It's not verified independently. So everything is very dubious.
It's interesting. I can vividly recall we had Hans Blix on this program trying to convince, saying again and again and again, we cannot find a hint of evidence about WMDs, and yet we know what happened as a consequence. And now the Americans seem to be at it again. What do you think of, what's Pompeo's motives in this?
Well, I think Pompeo and John Bolton represent the more hawkish members of the Trump administration, and they have been very clear, especially John Bolton has been very clear on what they want. They want regime change. Last year, Mike Pompeo presented a 12-point document to the Iranian government and said, if you don't comply by these 12 points, then all hell is going to break loose. And those points basically went to the very core of the Islamic Republic of Iran, to the very core of its existence. It was asking Iran to break ties with Hezbollah, just completely reverse everything. And clearly, if Iran followed through with those 12 points, it would have been the end of Islamic Republic. So it was a call for regime change without actually using the word regime change.
It's interesting that on that Fox interview, Pompeo stressed that the US gets relatively little of its energy supplies through the Strait. But of course, others do.
Others do. Asia does. Yes, indeed.
So who is dependent on it? I guess it's, well, China must be interested, Japan, India, South Korea.
Well, exactly. A lot of oil from Persian Gulf goes to Asia, India, Korea, China, Japan. Yeah, they all depend on the oil that flows through Strait of Hormuz. And that's why it's important. But of course, you know, what happens in the Strait of Hormuz and oil production and oil shipments is going to affect the price of oil globally. So it's going to have global repercussions. It's not just the immediate consumers that are affected.
Last week, I remember Bruce Shapiro making the point that Bolton has never seen a Middle Eastern war he didn't like. But we also felt that perhaps Trump didn't share his enthusiasm.
I don't think Trump knows what he wants, clearly. I think Trump is goes by his instinct. Trump is keen to destroy everything that Obama has built to mark a difference. And Obama had achieved a historic deal with Iran and the international other international partners in 2015 on this nuclear deal. So that was a major achievement, and Trump is destroying it because it wasn't good enough for him.
And of course, we've got to remember that Trump pulled out of the US-Iran nuclear deal last year.
Yes, yes. So he pulled out of that deal last year because he thought the deal didn't go far enough. It didn't address Iran's foreign policy and behavior in the region. And of course it didn't. He was right in that sense. The deal was not designed to rectify and correct every aspect of Iranian behavior. The deal was designed to contain and manage Iran's nuclear program so that Iran doesn't actually develop, go down the path of developing nuclear weapons.
Skeptics might say that Trump was basically following Saudi and Israeli policy. I remember last year we did a story on Bibi and how happy he was with the US pulling out of that deal.
Yes, well, Israel and Saudi Arabia have been quite vocal in the sense that they have been asking for robust and quite assertive American action against Iran. They are happy with the regime change agenda, but that's going to be a devastating scenario if Trump follows through with that. We've seen what happened with Iraq. We've seen the anarchy, the instability that has really destroyed Iraq for more than a decade now. So it would be a disaster if they tried anything remotely close to regime change in Iran.
As the temperature rises on Iran, it's good to be reminded of the past efforts to contain Iran through sanctions and threats only led to a further entrenching of the hardliners in the regime and intolerance of internal dissent. You will be familiar with those words, Sharam. They're yours.
Yes, you're tweeting. You're reading my tweet, I believe, yes.
So let's just do a riff on that. The efforts so far have been so counterproductive.
They have been counterproductive because the Islamic Republic of Iran, the clergy, the Revolutionary Guards, there are so many people with a vested interest in maintaining power, and they are very suspicious of the international community, and they're very suspicious of efforts by reformists like Khatami, before the former President Khatami, and now President Rouhani. They are very suspicious of these kind of diplomatic overtures because they think these kind of overtures make Iran look weak and if they put Iran at the mercy of international bullies like the United States. So when the U.S. behaves like this, they feel vindicated. They say, look, they say to the reformists and pragmatists, look, you have wasted our time, you have wasted our resources, you have made us look weak, and now it's time to really show foreigners, the US, the bully, that we can really stand on our own feet and defend ourselves. So it really feeds the fire of extremism in Iran. It feeds the fire of hardliners in Iran. And that's really difficult then for international community to find common ground. And it's also very difficult for civil society in Iran. There are so many NGOs and civil society activists in Iran who are trying to find some level of normalcy in the country. And it's difficult to achieve that when you have hardliners going on really hard and difficult on civil society activism.
This is LNL on RN, and I'm speaking to Sharan Akbazadeh, research professor in Middle East and Central Asian politics at Deakin. And we must make the point that, Rouhani was elected at a critical time in Iran's history, wasn't he? And he was more open to contact with the West. So this must make him vulnerable.
Very vulnerable, very vulnerable. Rouhani came to office with the message of bringing Iran out of isolation. You know, he had this catchphrase in Persian which said, we need to make sure that the wheels of the economy turn. So, you know, basically he wanted to bring Iran out of isolation and revive the economy. That was his electoral slogan. He won the election based on that because people trusted that he is actually going to achieve that. And to all intents and purposes, he did. Iran signed a nuclear deal with the international community in 2015, which made Iran subject to quite stringent international inspection regime to contain its nuclear program in return for removal of sanctions. And still now, until very recently, the international community, the United Nations, Europeans, Russia, they have all attested that Iran has complied with its obligation under the treaty. So it's quite significant that Rouhani achieved this despite so much internal opposition to that kind of diplomatic response.
What are the sanctions done to ordinary people in Iran?
Well, ordinary people in Iran, I mean, they are, it's a very divided society. Iran has a lot of people who are salary earners are in really difficult strife. The prices are going up on a daily basis, on hourly basis sometimes. The value of Iranian currency, riyal, has dropped. So it's really
tough. We haven't yet seen hyperinflation, have we?
It's really tough. The prices are going up on a daily basis, and this has caused major upset for the ordinary people, and it has caused to some extent disruption and rioting in the streets. If you recall, in January 2018, there was a riot in Iran, bread riot in Iran, over the price of chicken. So I think that's what the Trump administration is banking on, rioting in the streets and disruption and therefore fall of the regime.
Let's look at the neighbourhood, the charming Saudi Arabians. The Saudi comments recently, in fact, the Saudi Crown Prince said on Sunday that the kingdom will not hesitate to confront Iranian threats to its security.
Yes, well, I'm not sure what threats they are referring to. They are probably referring to Iran's connections with the Houthis in Yemen and the war that's going on in Yemen. But the whole notion that Iran is a security threat to its neighbors is a fabricated fiction. It's really made up. Iran has not been aggressive towards any of its neighbors. In fact, many Iranians refer to the Iran-Iraq war that lasted for about 8 years as evidence that Iran has been the target of foreign intervention. Iraq attacked Iran, and Saudis and many of the Gulf countries supported Iraq, and the United States also provided assistance to Iraq that prolonged the conflict for 8 years.
Shahram, here's Bolton and Pompeo beating the drums of war, but as you said at the beginning, quite a lot of very influential countries aren't buying it yet. Will the skepticism in Europe and elsewhere slow this juggernaut down?
I think what we are facing is that a very high risk scenario for accidents. The fact that U.S. Navy is in such close proximity with Iranian forces really increases chances of accidental conflict and clash.
Well, let's remember what happened in 1988 when U.S. warship shot down an Iranian civil airliner, killing
seven airline by mistake, but that can happen.
Killed 300 people.
Right, right. So that was a tragic accident, tragic event. No one's claiming that the Americans did this on purpose, but that's what happens when you have a very tense scenario with two armies facing each other, so to speak. Accidents can happen. And it can then escalate quite easily out of hand. It's not that Trump, I don't believe that Trump is really looking for war. And he said that. He doesn't want war. And he probably doesn't want regime change either, even though Pompeo and John Bolton might want to. But the fact that they are there, it really raises tensions and raises the risk of conflict.
Shahram, it's very good to talk to you, and I'm most grateful for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Shahram is research professor in Middle East and Central Asian politics at Deakin.